Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. We're going to get started in just a minute here. A few reminders before we get started. All upcoming professional development offerings are listed on our webpage at nysrti.org. A copy of today's PowerPoint, as well as an assessment audit, are available on our webpage under Webinars and then under today's webinar title. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, we will post a link to a brief evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we appreciate the feedback. We are very pleased to have with us today Dr. Catherine Stahl, to present our Strand 14 series, using an assessment audit to create a lean and efficient RTI assessment system for grades 3 through 6. Today's topic is grades 3 through 6, general introduction to the assessment audit process, forms, and foundations. Dr. Stahl is a clinical associate professor of literacy at New York University. She studies the effective instruction of reading in the elementary years. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic, and for over 25 years, she has taught in high-poverty public elementary and middle school classrooms. The questions that she researches stem from those experiences and from current classroom observations. Her research examines reading acquisition and reading comprehension. Dr. Stahl has written 5 books related to literacy instruction. She earned her Ed.D. in reading education from the University of Georgia in 2003. And at this time, it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Stahl.
Thank you, Molly. Welcome, everyone. So today we are going to begin our work with an assessment audit. For those of you who are working with folks in grades 3 through 6, and as Molly said, you know, we have the handouts that will be helpful to you will be the handouts that are available for this presentation. And also, even though we will have some screenshots of the assessment audit, you may be able to read it more clearly if you actually have your own copy of one there to refer to as we go through the forms associated with the audit. So today we will be chatting about the purpose of doing an assessment audit, also what you need to include in the audit, the constructs and functions of different tests that you will be evaluating in your during your audit process, and who will be and who should be participating within this process, and how that can be achieved most effectively to get everyone, all the related parties, to participate. So first, I would like to know a little bit about who our audience members are. So if you will please, Molly, if you'll put up our poll, and if you could signal to me what role you are currently serving, and if you have a role that is other, would you please chat what that role is? I think we have some data folks with us today. So if you are one of those other people, please chat in what you do. CSE chairperson. Great, K to 12. Other folks that have a different role. College faculty. Thank you, Teresa. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to everyone for taking time out in the afternoon during this very busy time of the year. Oh, and a teacher candidate. Fabulous. I love seeing prospective teachers. Okay, and so let me just also mention, so we really do have a wide range of folks here, and a principal, special educator, as well as a literacy interventionist. And principal, and no, it doesn't look like we have any classroom teachers, so that's very interesting. So I will certainly, this helps me in terms of focusing what we talk about. I certainly can't change the slides at this point, but we can change our focus to meet your needs. So, Molly, I think we'll go to our next slide. Erin, you can continue typing. Oh, great. So special education. And then the next thing I would like to find out from you is what grade levels you're responsible for, whether you're responsible for all the grade levels or whether your work tends to focus in a third, fourth, fifth, or sixth grade area. And I do want to just emphasize that although we have included grade six on our program, when we speak of grade six, we are really speaking of the type of grade six that is inclusive within an elementary school. We really are not going to be targeting any kind of middle school concerns during this particular presentation or this audit. We will be focusing more on elementary school and intermediate schools that may go up to grade six, but not really a separate middle school with those very upper grades. And so most of you do work in all the grades, and so that's really fantastic because, you know, I think, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, about doing the audit. It really is most powerful when you are doing it at a school or district level. So I'm really delighted to see so many district people and people who work with all of the grade levels. So this is very helpful. Thank you so much. And it also helps me to know that I'm not talking into a dark hole, to see that you're out there and you're with me in this presentation. So that's very helpful. Thank you. So we'll go to the next slide now. Okay. So Molly gave you an introduction to me, you know, just to let you know that I, you know, really I consider myself a teacher first, you know, based on my experience of 27 years in classrooms, and I continue to do work in the schools thanks, you know, to both my business as a consultant, in which I go into schools and help them. So I stay very current with what's happening, and also the work that I've been doing the last 6 years with our RTI Technical Assistance Center, which enables me to get into lots of schools and see how they implement the RTI process, and also to support schools in conducting this audit and helping them to refine their assessment system. Two resources for later reference for you. That New York, and you know, most of you are familiar with our RTI website if you were able to access, you know, the information about today's webinar, but I really hope you will take full advantage of that treasure trove of information that is on our website. There are former, you know, there are 14 different previous webinar series that are available to you to reference and to go back and look at. Also, as we talk about the audit process, we have been working over the, or we worked over the last 5 years with 14 different pilot schools, that you can actually look at those pilot schools' website, their school information, and see samples of different assessment audits and how those very unique schools actually underwent this process. So there are some wonderful examples and wonderful resources on that website, as well as follow-up information in terms of doing the assessment audit, more detailed information. I will certainly be walking you through the process during these three webinars, but it's also nice. We all learn in different ways. If you'd like to go back and refer to the details in text, then the reading assessment in an RTI framework actually talks in detail about not only the audit process, but assessments that are most useful at each of the tiers and how to effectively use them in a school setting. So I hope you'll refer to those resources. So the assessment audit is a really important process in streamlining the assessments that your school is using. And so some of the things that you might want to ask yourself about actually conducting a school assessment audit is, when was the last time you actually took a look at your assessment tools that are being used in your school? And so often, you know, we continue to add assessments on one after the other, you know, as policies change, as new administrators come on board, as assessment trends change and that pendulum swings in education. We seem to just keep adding things on and on. And so rather than really making sure that we are also eliminating some assessments that we no longer serve their use, assessments that may be redundant because we've added other things on. And so this the assessment audit is a good time to really take a comprehensive look at our system and to also help our faculty, whether those faculty are within our school or within our district, to have a common assessment system that we are using, and to help new faculty to know what the pieces of that system are that we are invested in and that we are all have, that we all have bought into. The other thing is, even if we have some assessments that we all are in agreement upon, that we may all be committed to, that we all may be required to do, how do we avoid what Maury Clay used to call as drift in terms of fidelity to assessment procedures? We want to make sure that if we're spending the time to do assessments, that we want to make sure that those assessments are valid, that they are testing what we want them to test. And we also want to make sure that they are reliable and that we have reliability such as teacher-to-teacher reliability, so that if a child is given a class, an assessment in one classroom, that and that same assessment is given in the classroom next door, that they are being given in the same standardized ways with the same values and would get the same score. So we want to take a look at how we can coordinate that. And finally, are these assessments, whether they're our informal assessments, formative assessments, whether they are aligned to the Common Core? Often some of the assessments that we are currently using, particularly in the areas of third through sixth grade, our key word, whether it's the Common Core or just our focus instructionally, is comprehension, comprehension, comprehension. And do the assessments that we are using in the upper grades really measure the comprehension and our students' expression of comprehension in ways that are valued and in accordance with the achievement of the Common Core standards, as well as what we value in terms of comprehension? So the purpose of our audit is to streamline and systematize our assessment process, because more is not always better. We want a lean and efficient, or what Mike McKenna and I called in our book, the lean and mean assessment system. Leaner is sometimes better, because when we have a lean assessment system, we can take the steps to make sure that it is reliable, that we're providing the training needed, that it is efficient, and that our data is clean. And so with that, one of the purposes of the audit is to streamline and to make that assessment system as lean as possible to get the data that we need to inform instruction. Finally, communication. We want to know within our schools who is doing what and how are they doing it. We want to provide the assessment audit process is an opportunity for us to have an open forum of communication, because teachers are doing assessments. Sometimes teachers in neighboring classrooms might be measuring the same thing, but one teacher might be very good with technology, and she has a very nice data system set up on her computer that color codes everything. All she has to do is enter the scores. And then the teacher right next door to her is administering the same assessment, but it's on little pieces of paper all over the place. And so by providing the time for these teachers to talk with each other, they can learn from each other, the most powerful form of professional development. And so, therefore, we do want to make sure that teachers have the opportunity to talk with each other about what they're doing, how are they administering the test, and importantly also, how are they recording it, and how is that data being shared among all the stakeholders, parents, interventionists, school psychologists. And next, in terms of communication, in red, what do we value? In so many schools that I visit, and I was guilty too when I was a teacher, of doing other assessments besides the mandated assessments behind closed doors. And so what is it that we do as teachers behind closed doors? Let's make it transparent, and let's tell everybody why we're doing this. As an administrator, we want to open this conversation up, because if teachers are doing assessments behind closed doors, they value it because the assessments that we are currently mandating or that are required somehow or other are not providing our teachers with the complete information that they may need to do their job instructionally. So let's see and put on the table what teachers are doing and why they are doing them. Not just what are they doing, but why is it that they are invested in doing particular assessments that they are currently doing, for better or worse. And it's this valuing, that's this conversation of what we value that truly enables when we get down the road and it's time to begin pruning and begin deciding on what assessments to keep for particular purposes and which assessments to discard, at that point we can all come to a consensus that we all buy into, because it's been a group process and we have a greater appreciation and understanding of each other. Finally, that's the evaluation process that is part of this audit process. And it is our process of, and our assessment system, is it valid and is it reliable? And so after we gather all the information through filling out our forms, then we get to have conversations with discussing whether our process is valid and reliable. And we want to discuss through the audit and figure out and problem solve, how can we get the information that we need about our students' literacy performance more effectively, but also more efficiently. And so we want to, in bold print, I think the important thing that we want to do and that we all would buy into as teachers, as interventionists, as administrators, and as district leaders, are the assessments that we are using serving us, or are we a servant to testing in ways that compromise instructional time and quality? So the first decision that you want to make, and this might change over time, is that what unit of observation do you currently plan to use? And it seems like I see a few teachers. I see some teachers that I'm very familiar with that I've actually worked with in some of our schools. And I love seeing those familiar names. I just picture your faces in my mind as I'm doing this. And so you want to think about what unit of observation do you currently plan to use? If you're an independent teacher attending this webinar, you may want to do it as an individual and just decide, I really want to take a look at the assessments I'm doing, all right, and see if I can update them, let go of some old ones, or update with some newer ones, or streamline. How can I streamline to be updated for the Common Core? You also might want to do this as a grade level, all right? Our second grade team, really the whole school is not bought into this yet. I have just become interested in this as a grade level member, and we're going to do it as a second grade team. We're going to look and see what assessment, or I'm sorry, as a fourth grade team, for example. We want to look and see what assessments we're using. Are the assessments we're using, are we getting results that are aligned with what our state ELA test, the results it's getting? And so a grade level may decide to do that. I think, and that still would yield some improvements. It would still yield some value. However, the most effective, where you get the most bang for your buck, is by doing it as a school-wide or district-wide project. And so what you need to decide is, at what level do you currently plan on investigating this? Do you plan to do this as an individual, just a single person, grade level team, your school, you're a school principal or assistant principal or a literacy coach, and you're going to help your school do this? Or as a district level, do you really want to update and clean up your literacy assessment system? So what I would like you to do now is tally in which you currently envision yourself doing. Okay, so that's interesting that we see about 50% of the people doing it at grade level or an individual. Okay. So, and that's certainly very workable. It's certainly very workable, and it's actually more simplistic. You can get it done more quickly that way. If you do it at the school-wide and district-wide level, it does take somewhat longer. But it's more powerful. So, but any of those are manageable. Okay, so we'll go to our next slide. So what needs to be included is that the audit is going to be a comprehensive inventory of what currently exists to gauge literacy performance and growth, okay? So it's either the literacy performance that children, you know, the level of achievement, or the amount of growth. It is non-judgmental. It's a non-judgmental stock-taking exercise. And you want to include every literacy assessment being used by every participant within the selected unit. So if you're doing it as a grade level, you even want to make sure that you're including those people like your English, your ESL teacher. You want to include your interventionist. You want to, the reading interventionist. You want to include your speech and language teacher, who may be doing some very powerful language assessments that influence comprehension. And also include your school psychologist, who is certainly going to be part of your RTI process in terms of looking at how assessments are used for intervention down the line with children who are having reading difficulties. And that brings us to, what are the functions of assessment that you're going to be looking at? So, because we do want to include all assessments and have everybody give the assessments that they're using for each of these purposes. We want to look at assessments that are used for screening, which are administered at the beginning of the year to quickly identify children who may need additional help. We want to look at the diagnostic assessments, which are an in-depth follow-up to screening, that are used. Now, most of the diagnostic tests are not given to every child because they're in-depth, so they might be given for those children for whom are not performing on grade level that we need to learn more about. And these results always do inform instruction. We also want to know about our progress. We want to have instruments and look at progress monitoring, which are short measures given throughout the year to make sure that all children are developing at an adequate rate. We also want to make sure that we are including whether or not we're using certain tools for the evaluation of a grade level's progress, or whether we are making progress in terms of reducing numbers of children at the school level and at the grade level in high-risk behavior, high-risk reading performance. So, and those evaluation measures often make use of screening tools, okay? even though they might be given at the end of the year to evaluate the overall performance. Okay. Here are some examples of screening measures that you currently might be using, things like achievement tests. I know a lot of the charter schools still use things like the Terra Nova, Gates McGinnity achievement tests. CBMs are frequently used as screening measures, those put out by companies with nice packages like Dibbles or Ames Web. In the upper grades, we're beginning to see many more schools use the very useful adaptive measures put out by companies like FastBridge that are computer-based. And these are very, these are tools that show a lot of promise and potential, and that we're seeing more and more of them being used as screening measures. Also, a mini informal reading inventory, which means classroom teachers just use the grade level passage and give that as a screening measure to see if children are reading on level or not, and to get a gauge of their retelling and comprehension ability to answer questions. And then using some other computer-based measures like STAR and iReady. So these are all common measures, common screening measures that your school might be using as a screening tool. Diagnostic measures. Diagnostic measures are things like the extended informal reading inventory process, where you're using something to get an instructional and independent reading level for a child, and it has an opportunity to ask the child to give a retelling and has some questions and answers that have been field tested. And other tools that are developmentally specific to each of those national reading panel pillars. So, for example, particular phonics measures that are still necessary for those children in third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade that are functioning below level. These are very important diagnostic tools. Developmental spelling inventories, think aloud tasks for the children who are having the most severe reading comprehension difficulties. That's a tool that can give you insight into a child's strategic processing. But again, that's very difficult to administer, and you would only want to use that for a handful of children. And then retellings, summaries, and strategy indices. These are examples of diagnostic measures. And finally, progress monitoring. These progress monitoring tools are a means of microscopically examining student achievement, and they trace individual learning trajectories, and they evaluate the effectiveness of instruction. They're very sensitive to growth that happens in a short duration of time. And the focus is two areas of focus: achievement level and rate of progress. And so those are the kinds of those. That's what you want to look at when you're progress monitoring. And that's why many people have relied on CBMs as progress monitoring tools, because they are standardized. They're a constant sensitive measure. Each weekly test is equivalent according to their field testing data. They're a general outcome measure. That means that they're looking at a holistic skill that spans the school year. There's a fixed time for test administration. And so some examples of these CBMs that you currently might be using are products from Dibbles, products from Ames Web, the FastBridge test of letter recognition fluency or oral reading fluency. So these would be examples of these tools. Now, the next thing I would like to ask you, again, a poll, is let's think about what are your three primary goals for instruction. What do you value the most for your children? And please pick three. Pick three. So as we can see from our poll, I don't know whether, I think you all can see the poll too. Our number one that we have here from most people who have polled is comprehension. That is our, you know, the ability to comprehend and use text is a number one goal. And then we also want to inspire the love of reading. And in order, these things are not separate. In order for those things to happen, we also need for children to be able to develop automatic word recognition. Because if reading, I'm going to go to the next slide now, Molly. If reading is going to be tedious, cumbersome, and children are, if it's cumbersome and hard to do, children are sure not going to enjoy it, nor are they going to understand the text. So the three goals of reading are typically that people select, and you were right in alignment with this, is to inspire the love of reading, to improve the ability to comprehend and use text, and then to develop those automatic word recognition processes. And so because the primary goal of reading is to comprehend, is that some of the pathways that we want to get kids to this is to help them to automatically recognize words quickly, understand language, and then in reading to be able to use intentional strategies in flexible ways for specific purposes. And so therefore, we want assessments that tap into these three pathways. And in the past, my husband and Mike McKenna and I have used this model to demonstrate those three pathways that lead to comprehension and that we want to really be taking a look at. And so if we look at our form, the constructs that are worth testing also fit those pathways. And in the upper grades, we most likely, and so now you might want to take a closer look at your form. So you might want to take a closer look at that form. And on the form, you know, it is unlikely in grades 3 through 6 that the teachers would still be assessing concepts about print and probably not phonological awareness, except those special ed teachers in your school probably have some tests on hand and will be doing these for children in special education in the upper grades who are still having problems in this area. So that's one construct. Again, the word recognition, which would involve your different kinds of phonics measures, and also measures of high-frequency words. Those would all be the, and even if your teachers are doing any kind of running records, like if they're using any kind of Founis and Pinnell benchmark kit, or if they're using an informal reading inventory, or even if they're using Dibbles, oral reading fluency, they are doing a word recognition task in context. And so that column, it's important to mention because that's the first place that we see and that we need to begin thinking about. These skills are referencing, and you might want to jot a little note down on your handout that this means we're looking at word recognition skills in isolation, like a phonics inventory, but we're also looking at it in context, like an oral reading of a passage, and we're marking the miscues and recording an accuracy level. So think about in isolation, in context. And also the same would apply for the high frequency words. You know, are the errors they're making in isolation, are they high frequency words? You know, we want to have an inventory and make sure that they have those first 300 to 500 fry words, under control, in isolation in 1 second, but also do they know them quickly enough that when they're reading connected text, they are not stumbling over one of the fry words on the first 500 by the time they get to third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. So that's an important element of that word recognition and high-frequency words. We also want a measure of the spelling development. I know that often by third, fourth, fifth grade, we have many schools that I visit have let go of any kind of spelling developmental work. And I think that that's something that during this audit process, I hope that you really will look at that in your school, because it looks to me from this list of people who are attending this session that many of you are working at a school and district level. And I think that it's important at third, fourth, and fifth grade to look at how that word work and word study really begins to look at morphology and syllable junctures and morphology and vocabulary. And we don't need a separate program to do that, but we do want to do it in a systematic way, and we don't want it thrown by the wayside. And so I think it's important in grades 3 through 6 to really look and see where there are checks in those boxes and what people are doing. Reading fluency. We have many good measures of reading fluency. At this stage of the game in grades 3 through 6, we're talking words correct per minute. And so we want to do the words correct per minute. And that's a very good, that's an important gauge, because that also at a screening level, that's a really important screener for you to know that words correct per minute. I think every third grade teacher should know off the top of their head how many words correct per minute their children are reading, especially anybody who they say is at risk. Then they should have that words correct per minute on their fingertips. And so how is that being gauged? And is it being gauged? And does everybody know it? It shouldn't just be a piece of paper in a workbook or in a binder. Conceptual vocabulary. Teachers are teaching lots of vocabulary, in service to comprehension and in service to disciplinary instruction. How are we assessing it? I have to say that that's one of the areas that most of the schools that I work with find that to be a void. So take a close look at that in your school and district. Comprehension, there are many ways we need to test comprehension. So we want to make sure that's included. And again, how is it reflected in both children's writing processes and their response to reading verbally and their response to reading in writing? And then the writing process. And finally, the last one cannot be ignored. Motivation and attitudes in grades 3 through 6, can make or break a child. And this is the age when we have to pay as deliberate attention to our motivation and attitudes of those struggling readers as we do word recognition. So we want, those are the constructs worth looking at. Then if we continue along on the form, we see function. So there is your screening, diagnostic progress monitoring, and outcome that you want to check. And you may be using these tests for multiple functions, particularly the test that you use for screening is often going to be the same test that you use as an outcome measure, because everybody's taking it. And they can serve multiple purposes. And so that should be, we want to, in making a lean and efficient assessment system, we want tests that can be served more than one function. That's desirable. And finally, training. Let's identify the training and administrative fidelity of each test. We can give tests and they are not worth the paper that they are written on, and they are certainly not worth the time that we have spent on this if they are not being administered in standardized ways from teacher to teacher. This is extremely important. So the introduction or initial training. I think that the new form says, my new form that you've downloaded, which is much better than introduction, says initial training. And so by initial training, that means that when you invest in a kit, either a kit, something like Founders and Pinnell Benchmark Kit, a lot of schools use that, or let's say FastBridge, or let's say Dibbles. And so you have made an investment in one of these companies. Most people will do the initial training. And anybody who is hired by the school or the school district, when that product is bought, undergoes the training. And that's great. That's great. However, it's not enough. If you bought Dibbles 3 years ago and your teachers have not had a training in it since, I can promise that there has been drift. I can promise that the teacher who is administering that test in room 4 is not administering it the same way the teacher in room 6 is administering it. I can promise you that some teachers are waiting 3 seconds before they give the kid the word, and some teachers are waiting 5 seconds. These things make a difference in outcome. The value that you have on a test is reliant on whether the teachers are adhering to a fidelity of administration of the test, whether they're scoring the test in common ways, whether they're interpreting it in common ways. And so, therefore, we want to make sure that thorough initial training, number one, is done every year with all new employees. Number two, we do also want to, every year and every test administration, if we give a test that's a screening test, whether it's Dibbles or whether it's that Founders and Pinnell or whether it's an IRI, that we are administering in fall, spring, and or fall, winter, and spring, then we need to make sure that we are engaging in fidelity checks. Dibbles, Ames Web have wonderful check sheets that they provide. You don't have to even make it up, so that teachers, peers, can go in and observe each other testing, say, 2 or 3 children, complete the check sheet, and then have a conversation to ensure that these procedures are being adhered to. If you are using something like, let's say you're using a writing process, one of the things that helps provide a fidelity check is by having a professional learning community which uses a common rubric, and we are scoring each other's papers. And so, therefore, that professional learning community serves as the fidelity check for these older children. Every kind of assessment, if you value the assessment, then you want to value and invest the time in creating a fidelity check sheet for that assessment. Then, regular boosters. A regular booster means that if we're administering a test in fall, winter, spring, that means the week before that test is administered, the grade level team is going to have a meeting and we are going to review the nuances of this particular test. Again, how many seconds do I wait before I tell a child a word on Dibbles? Is it 1 second? Is it 3 seconds? Is it 5 seconds? Because it's different with every test we give. It might be 3 seconds with Dibbles, but it's 5 seconds with the IRI. It's 1 second with the high-frequency words. And so I can't even remember that. And I teach courses on testing. I have got to give myself a little booster before I administer any test, before I teach any test. And so teachers have so much on their plates today that we need to support them by providing a regular booster. And you want to note this on your check sheet of whether you have provided each of these kinds of training for your teachers to make sure that the data you're getting is reliable. Okay, next, who participates in your assessment audit? So we want grade level classroom teachers, So if you're, so I'm sorry, this is, if you are doing, a couple people said that they were going to simply be doing this at the grade level. So let's say the group of third grade teachers wants to do an assessment audit. So that means at the grade level, they would include, all the classroom teachers would be participating. Also, the interventionists that work with their team would participate, the L teachers who work with their team, and the special language, the speech and language therapist, and the school psychologist. So they would contribute to a grade level audit, all right? And so the first step, if you're also doing this as a school or a district, the grade level audit is the first step. So first you get individuals to complete the audit form, then the grade level completes the audit form together, and these people feed into the grade level audit process. All right. And after the grade level has completed their audit, and in our next meeting on March 30th, we will be going into the very, very nitty-gritty details of what this grade level audit actually looks like and doing it at a grade level. So if you're a school principal, after March 30th session, you will be able to know how to direct your teachers and, you know, how to conduct this individually and how to do it at the, what process to engage in at the grade level. But the grade level, the individual filling out the form individually, each teacher does that individually, that's step one. And they bring their individual form of everything they did to their grade level meeting. And these are the people who attend that grade level meeting and discuss the grade level assessments. And then the next step is that a grade level classroom teacher representative would present his or her grade level audit at the school-wide audit meeting. So who participates in the school-wide audit meeting? Well, we would have a grade level representative from each grade level. We would have a literacy specialist or interventionist representative. You don't need every single literacy specialist at that meeting. One. Okay, we want to have every voice represented, but we also want to get something done, all right? We don't want 30 people. You know, if you have 30 people at your school-wide meeting, that is going to extend this process. So we want to have one representative from each of these teams who can represent what that team said and verbalized. We want to have one special education teacher representative, the English language learner teacher representative, a speech language therapist, and a school psychologist. It's important for that school psychologist to be there. And if you have a data person, that person needs to be there as well. All right. So we certainly want that person to be there as well. The district-wide audit process is, this is where you really can make some powerful changes. I will tell you, I worked with two school districts last year that did this as a district-wide process. And it was a lengthier process, but it was a very worthwhile process because they really accomplished a lot and were able to bring a lot of skeletons out of the closet, you know, things that people felt and believed were able to be expressed in an open way. And so they, both of those districts, it took them multiple meetings to do it at the district level, but both of those districts ended up with something that they were very happy with and that teachers now bought into. And so there was going to be less of this hiding assessments and behind closed doors and redundancy in assessments behind closed doors. And so the district-wide process, while it may be more complex, you really get paid off in huge benefits. And so with the district-wide, let me back up just a minute. This school-wide, the school-wide audit meetings, we need the school principal here. I don't know how that got left out of this. I'm sorry, I don't know how this got left off of this this slide. But the number one, the person at the first bullet that needs to be there and the person who needs to actually head this meeting up is the school principal and the assistant principal, because they're the ones who really have the oversight of the school and the vision. Now, when we get to the district-wide process, we do want a district curriculum literacy administrator heading that. That's the person who's sort of chairing this meeting. Also, with a classroom teacher representative from each school, with a distribution of grade levels. All right, so you want that. You don't need every grade level representative from every school, but what you want is you want a person from every school and you want every grade level representative. You want one or two literacy specialist representatives. You want one or two special ed representatives. You want somebody from the English language learner folks. You want a speech language representative. You want school psychologists must be there. And then at the district level, you don't need to have every principal here at every meeting, because you're going to need to have probably two or three. These district-wide meetings, we needed two or three of them with the districts I worked with. And I know it's hard for principals to be out of the building that often. But what you do want is you want to have intermittent meetings with the principals that are updating them on the process. The way when I worked with these districts doing that, the way one of the districts did it was they had meetings with the principals that were after hours. It was like, they called it like a salon, all right? And we had refreshments, and that kept the principals in the loop with what was happening at these meetings and gave them to have feedback before the final process, but it kept them in the loop to know what was happening. And so that's one way of doing it. Another way is to just have a day-long meeting after you've gotten through this process, to have the day-long meeting so the principals know what's what. And you may have your own way of doing it. These two school districts found different ways to do it, but they made sure that the right hand knew what the left hand was doing. That is imperative in this process. We've got to have the principals kept in the loop. Okay, so now the next time that we all will get together will be on March 30th. When we get together on March 30th, that is where we will really do the nuts and bolts of walking through this form with detailed information about particular tests that go into each construct. That should have been secondary grades, or intermediate grades, that are likely to be used in those intermediate grades. All right, so I did this presentation back with the primary grades, and when we did presentation 2 with primary grades, I talked explicitly about tests that fit into each of those constructs. And then we actually did hands-on examples of the tests and talked about how they fit in. And the participants then also had an opportunity to generate their own tests that they use in their schools and generate some questions for me live as to, okay, where would this fit in this category? How would this fit in this category? And what does this say about this? And so that was the hands-on activity that you will also get to participate in on March 30th, all right? And we'll also talk more about the ways those specialized school personnel can be included, you know, either at the grade level or also in terms of the specialized diagnostic tests that they give and know about that not everybody knows about and not everybody has to know about them or know how to do them. That, again, when you talk about these specialized school personnel, that's another reason and another incentive for the district to do this. Because if you're wanting to train and get some specialized diagnostic kinds of tests for your special ed teachers and to really refine what those special ed teachers know how to do diagnostically so they can get stronger outcomes with their kids. You can't do that school by school. It has to be done at the district level. And so therefore, those of you who are working as doing this as a district, fabulous. If you're doing it as a school, that's a great first step, and you may want to be the one who initiates this at a district level. And finally, we will talk about how to synthesize the separate data sources to create the big picture. More of that kind of synthesis process and what you do with the data after you collect it will be done in our third webinar, because we will give you a month, I think it's a month or even 6 weeks, after March 30th, you will have another month to go back to your school and actually train and do this assessment audit at the building level. So for now, you don't really have to do anything right now except, you know, between now and March 30th, except think about this, begin thinking about how you're going to organize it, but you don't have to necessarily get started. After March 30 is when you will have the tools to actually get this process and to get these forms filled out and get that information collected between March 30th and the date when we meet. I think it's like our third meeting might be, I think, May, maybe the end of April or the beginning of May. It might even be like the first week of May. So you will have time then to actually complete this process. So now what I'd like to do is open it up for some of your questions about the audit process or about anything else. Should the data person attend? I love these questions. Should the data person attend the district-wide audit? Absolutely. We certainly need, and I would say that might be a place where the school data person might, I would say all, you know, every single data person at the school, depending on how many schools are at the district, you don't want 12 data people there. But if you're a small district, then you would want to have, let's say you only have 3 elementary schools in your district. You would want all 3 data people to be there. If you have 12 schools in your district, then again, you might want, say, 3 data people to be at the district meeting to go back and share what they've learned and what the consensus is with their data team. But you definitely do want the data people to be attending the district-wide audit meeting. Yes. Other questions? So we are open. You know, you can, to ask me a question, you can just type in that chat space and you can have a question that I can answer for you about your own school or your own district process and what you have in mind in terms of doing. Oh, good. I see some typing. And while those of you who are typing, while I'm still waiting for that to show up, I do want to, again, put in another plug for you to go to the RTI website, go into the menu item that says pilot schools, and look at the hard work that the pilot schools did. Yes, so look at the samples that they did. Oh, Teresa, that's great. I'm glad that you want me to clarify that. So, yes, the process, okay, you know, in terms of K-3 and 3-6, the actual process is actually exactly the same. So the process, and we're going to talk about this in the next slide, but basically the process is that a single teacher completes the form for for whatever grade she's in. So if you look at the form, it says first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade. So every classroom teacher would get a form. And as you see, the forms look exactly the same. So the teacher would get the form, and she would jot down where it says assessment tool. She would jot down every single test that she uses in her classroom. That doesn't matter. If you're a kindergarten teacher, you might be using a letter ID, but if you're a fourth grade teacher, you might be using something like a you might be using something like the Dibbles oral reading fluency, or you might be using, let's say you're using the modules, the New York State modules. At the end of every unit, they have, or at the end of every module, they have, or a strand, they actually have a test. And so, like, for example, they have a writing assignment. So a fourth grade teacher would, in her spot, she would say, oh, well, I do the end of unit writing, process writing. I do the end of unit vocabulary or the weekly vocabulary test that the unit does. And so she would write that down as in terms of her assessment tool. All right, and then she would use it in terms of how is she using it in terms of a screening, a diagnostic, progress monitoring, or an outcome measure, and then she would fill in what construct is assessed. So the process is the same, and then that first grade, the kindergarten teacher would go to her team level meeting. The fourth grade teacher would identify all the assessments that she or he uses and then would go to his or her grade level team. The assessments in kindergarten and the assessments in fourth grade are going to look very different. And that's why the second session that we're having on March 30th is so very important. Because what I will be doing in that session is I will actually be talking about in grades 3, 4, 5, 6, what are the assessments that you are likely to see in the categories such as comprehension, because it gets very muddled related to comprehension. And comprehension is multidimensional. It's not like letter learning. It's not like, oh, I have one test. I ask kids to say the names of the letters. Check. I'm done. In comprehension, you are going to have, I would expect, 5 tests because there is not a single bullet for comprehension. And so in third through sixth grade, you are dealing with those unconstrained skills of vocabulary and comprehension. And so you're going to have 5 or 6 different tests that all are assessing comprehension. And that doesn't mean they're redundant. For example, a comprehension test like an informal reading inventory that is at the child's instructional level, they have read the whole passage silently, because that's how they are thinking, and that's how you and I read, and that's how we read to learn, and they've read it silently, and they've answered, they've done a retelling where you have checked off a number of idea units that's normed with a field test, and then you're asking them 10 comprehension questions about that passage. That is giving you very different information than your maze task. It's giving you very different information than a written response that you've done with your module. And so all of these are not redundant, but they are very different ways of measuring it. And so that's why the process looks the same, but the assessments that you folks in grades 3 through 6, it gets very, very muddy. It gets very, very murky. And so that's exactly what we're going to be talking about, that murkiness of it, on March 30th. And but the process, if for those of you who may have been here for our Webinar 13 series with K-3, the process is the same, but how you analyze what construct you're assessing in terms of comprehension, vocabulary, writing process, and I would even say attitude, that becomes much murkier and much more specific to grades 3 through 6. I hope, Teresa, I hope that it made some of that clear and will help also make it clear for people about what we're going to be talking about on March 30th. Because it really is comprehension. We're dealing with a whole different ball game. Some other questions about this process. And I sure do appreciate, we still have another few minutes for someone else that has some questions that may not have been clear. I'm so happy to see our folks that are attending. And as I said, I just love seeing those familiar names of people that I know that with schools that I've been working with. And, you know, and I'm also excited that I see some names from our RTI schools, you know who you are, that have undergone this process one time, and I'm excited to see that you found that useful and are ready to do an update with your new administrator. That's very promising. I'm excited for you. I hope you'll join us on March 30th. Molly, you want to close
yes,
it out?
Yes, thank you, everyone. I see somebody's typing, but while we're waiting for that to come up,
Hi,
I'm going to post.
I see Patty Rooney typing.
Yes, and while we're waiting for Patty, I'm going to post the link to the evaluation.
Okay.
And we'll give Patty a minute to.
Yes, Patty, you can still keep on typing. I'll still be able to see you even when people start their Survey Monkey about our, you know, to provide a brief evaluation of the webinar. Oh, I will certainly come visit you, Patty, at Bronx Charter School for the Arts. So it's great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you, everyone, and we hope to see everybody on March 30th. And Dr. Stahl, if you'll just hang up for a minute, I appreciate it.
Hang on for a minute or hang up for a minute?
Hang on for a minute.
Okay.